I can remember when I was a kid and we would celebrate Mother's Day in our church, all of the mothers would be recognized and then they would give prizes. They would recognize the oldest mother, dear Miss Bessie Penn, bless her dear heart, she won it every single year. They would recognize the youngest mother. They would recognize the mother with the most children. My mother won that award one year and was highly embarrassed. There were four of us, but she still won the award. The most grandchildren, they just gave out all kinds of awards. But things were different back then. In the 1950s, 60% of the households in this country contained a mother, a father, and children, what you might call a traditional family. 60%, but in these traditional families, the mother did not work outside the home. The father was the breadwinner. 60% fit that model. You know what that percentage is today? 7%. Only 7% of families have a father who's the breadwinner, a mother who stays at home with children. Everything has changed. In 1970, 71% of the households were married couples, whether they had children or not. Today, that's less than 50%. But let me ask you a question, and this is something I've never considered before. Have you ever tried to find a traditional family in the Bible? Don't look in the Old Testament. Because all of our biblical heroes, they either had more than one wife, wives and concubines, not a good role model for what we would call the traditional family. And in this scripture that Christy shared with us from Psalm 127, it says that children are a heritage, a blessing from the Lord. But look at King David, one of the greatest role models of faith in Scripture, but his family was a royal mess. And if you think your family has problems, just look at David, beginning with his own indiscretions and failures. And so let's go to the New Testament. In the New Testament, we know that Simon Peter was married because Jesus heals his mother-in-law, but we don't know anything about his family. We know a young John Mark, who went on to write the first gospel, lived with his mother in Jerusalem. He also went on the first missionary journey with Paul when he became homesick for his mama and went home, but nothing is ever mentioned about his father. Young Timothy, who worked with the Apostle Paul, is known for a Greek father, a Jewish mother, and Paul commends his mother and grandmother for the spiritual influence on his life, but nothing is said about his father. You have two married couples that we know of in the book of Acts. You have Aquila and Priscilla, who had a tremendous positive influence on the church, but then you have another married couple, Ananias and Sapphira, who have a negative influence upon the church. And even the family of Jesus, we know his mother Mary, his earthly father Joseph, and we know that when Jesus was 12 years old that Mary and Joseph took him to Jerusalem. But after that, we don't know what happened to Joseph. He is never mentioned. We assume that somewhere along the way he died. And that would tell us that if not Jesus, at least some of his brothers and sisters lived for a time with a single parent, with only Mary and not a father. So we can't look in Scripture and find a traditional family. But as Christy shared with us this scripture from the Gospel of Mark, I think it's one of the most fascinating scriptures in the Gospels. Jesus is just beginning his public ministry. His popularity, his fame, it's growing everywhere like wildfire. Everybody's heard about Jesus. Every town that he goes in, people come because they know that he can perform miracles. And one day he's outside a house, and there are all of these people crowded around the house, and somebody says to Jesus, "Your mother, your brothers, your sisters are here." You know what? Why they were there? It was a first century family intervention. They thought Jesus had lost his mind, and they thought he needed to come home to Nazareth, let Mama do some of the good home cooking, and let him just settle down for a while. So that's why they were there. And they said, "Jesus, your mother is here, your brothers are here, your sisters are here." And what he does is remarkable. He redefines family. For he said, "Well, who is my family? My mother, my brothers, my sister. My family is the one who does the will of God." He redefines family. Now, we know that Jesus did not neglect his family, especially his mother. Even when he's dying on the cross, he commits the care of his mother Mary to John. And tradition says that John took Mary to Ephesus and he cared for her. Makes you wonder what happened to his brothers. You see, there might have even been dysfunction in the family of Jesus. But what Jesus tells us is simply this. Family is not just your biological family. Family is the community of faith. The great spiritual writer, Catholic priest Henry Nouwen, talks about the house of love. He says that we, the people of faith, we have forgotten our address. We have forgotten where we live. Because rather than living in a house of love, we're like the rest of the world. We live in a house of fear. We live in a fear-filled society. Everywhere you look, we have reason to be afraid. There's economic uncertainty. There's all of the violence. There's constant terrorism. There are terrible things that happen to children and to young people as witnessed by this event that has unfolded in Cleveland. All over this nation and all over the world, we have reason to be afraid. And while Jesus did not talk specifically about the, quote, traditional family, do you know what he did talk about more than anything else? He talked about children. Read the 9th chapter of Mark and the 10th chapter of Mark when Jesus said the most important thing is for us to protect our children. When the disciples just didn't get it, when they were trying to understand what it meant that they were following the one who was the Messiah, the Son of God, and they just were confused and they were worried about who was going to be most important and who was going to have this position and that position, Jesus just said, "Hold on a minute." And he took a little child and he put the child in front of them and he said, "Don't you guys get it? Don't you know that this is the most important thing, that we protect our children?" Even when Jesus talks about marriage and divorce, he does so in the context of protecting our children. And if children ever need to be protected, it's today. One child in three today is born to an unmarried couple. One child in eight is born today to a teenage mother. One child in two. 50% of the children who are born today will at some point experience a single parent household. Because divorce is over 50%. Divorces of second marriages are almost 70%, and divorces of third marriages are 75%. And so for every child that is born today, there's a 50% chance that it's somewhere along the way they're only going to have one parent. So how do we respond to all of this? We respond, we are the family. Where do children find love? Where do they find support? When we have children who are afraid to go home at night because they are abused, where can they find safety and security? It should be right here in the church. This should be the house of love. Christy, you said it so well when you were talking about Chad, but we are the family. And when someone like Chad is going through the problem that he's going through now with cancer, we want to be there to help every way we can, to love and support everyone in the family. That's who we are. Because our children live in a world in which there is so much fear and hatred and violence and abuse and injustice and bitterness. And we in the church can provide love and forgiveness and stability and safety and security. Several of us just got back from a wonderful trip to Richmond, Virginia. We had 53 on the bus that left here early Monday morning on the Bible study field trip. That is a remarkable city. But while we were there, we had the opportunity to visit historic St. Paul's Episcopal Church. It's right next door to the state capitol, the one designed by Thomas Jefferson. And it was at St. Paul's Church where Jefferson Davis, when he was president of the Confederacy, worshipped, and where Robert E. Lee worshipped. On an April Sunday in 1865, while Jefferson Davis was sitting in his pew at the church, a messenger came and delivered the notice that Petersburg had fallen and Richmond would not be far behind. Jefferson Davis and his family and everyone else evacuated the city of Richmond. But Robert E. Lee's wife, who was an invalid, could not, and his daughter, they remained behind. When the Union forces came, they posted guards at the home of Mrs. Lee in an act of respect. Well, a few weeks after Appomattox, when Robert E. Lee had surrendered, he came back to Richmond, and he lived there until he was called to be the president of Washington College in Lexington, which is now Washington and Lee. But they said that it was one day, it was in late June, early July, just a few weeks after Appomattox. The people of Richmond were living in a world of fear. There was tremendous anxiety. No one knew what the future would hold. All of the slaves had been set free. People didn't know what would happen in this new social order. But they had come to worship as they came every Sunday. And it was time for communion. And as the time for communion started, there was a black man who walked down the aisle of the church and who knelt at the altar to receive communion. Well, people were horrified. I've actually heard two different versions. I've heard one that it was a young black man who came down the aisle defiantly. The other story is an older gentleman who was very well dressed, who walked humbly down the aisle. But he knelt to receive communion. The clergy members were shocked. They didn't know what to do. They had never had that happen before. The people in the congregation were aghast. I mean, they were just speechless, breathless. Suddenly, a distinguished gentleman in his usual place at the back of the church stood, and confidently, humbly, with dignity, walked to the front. And when people saw this man coming to the front, they knew that the situation would be resolved. They knew that whatever he did would be the right thing. Most people expected him to come down and to remove the black man in one way or another. But when Robert E. Lee came to the altar, he knelt beside the black man and motioned to the clergy, and together they received communion. We are the house of love. It is here that we find God's family. Let us